A few rows farther back, a taller man, blonde hair cropped short, got to his feet. "Rolf Urquist, Space Transportation Department," he said, in a clear tenor voice. "I would be willing to take my accumulated vacation time to work on this fusion project." Dan smiled at them both. "Thank you." "And I believe," Urquist continued, "that Dr. Cardenas would be interested also." Turning slightly, he called, "Dr. Cardenas, are you here?" No one answered. "I will find her," Urquist said, very seriously. "It is a shame she is not present today." Dan looked expectantly out at the audience, but no one else stood up. At last he said, "Thank you," and stepped away from the podium, back into the wings of the stage. Stavanger gave him a quick thumbs-up signal and returned to the podium for the final item on the meeting's agenda, a request from a retired couple to enlarge their living quarters so they could have enough space to start a new business for themselves. Once the meeting broke up, Stavanger said, "If Chris Cardenas had been anywhere in Selenia, I would have introduced you to her. Unfortunately, she's in a space station in near-Earth orbit, working on developing nanomachines to bring down the cost of the Mars Exploration Centers." "Which station?" Dan asked. "The one over South America." Dan grinned at him. "Nueva Venezuela. I helped build that sucker. Maybe it's time for me to pay a visit there."
Alphonsus.
Pancho watched the safety demonstration very carefully. No matter that she had put on a spacesuit and done EVA work dozens of times, she paid patient attention to every word of the demo. This was going to be on the surface of the moon, and the differences between orbital EVAs and a moonwalk were enough to worry about. The tourists in the bus didn't seem to give a damn. Hell, Pancho thought, if they're stinky rich enough to afford a vacation jaunt to the moon, they must have the attitude that nothing bad will happen to them. And if it does, they'll get their lawyers to sue the hell out of everybody between here and Mars. They had all suited up in the garage at Selene before getting onto the bus. It was easier that way. The bus was way too tight for 14 tourists to wriggle and squeeze into their spacesuits. They rode out to the Ranger 9 site in the hard shell suits, their helmets in their laps. After all these years, Pancho thought, they still haven't come up with anything better than these hard shell suits. The science guys keep talking about soft suits and even nano-machine skins, but it's still nothing more than talk. Even the teenagers went quiet once they cleared the garage airlock and drove out onto the cracked pockmarked surface of Alphonsus. 108 kilometers across, the crater floor went clear over the horizon. The ringwall mountains looked old and weary, slumped smooth from eons of being sandpapered by the constant infall of meteoric dust. It was the dust that worried Pancho. In orbital space, you were floating in vacuum. On the surface of the moon, you had to walk on the powdery regolith, sort of like walking on beach sand, except the sand billowed up and covered your boots with fine gray dust. Not just your boots, either, Pancho reminded herself. She'd heard tales about lunar dust getting into a suit's joints, even into the life support backpack. The dust was electrostatically charged from the incoming solar wind, too, and this made the freaking stuff cling like mad. If it got on your visor, it could blind you. Try to wipe it off with your gloves, and you just smeared it worse. They'd had some trouble finding Pancho a suit that would fit her comfortably. In the end, they had to break out a brand new one, sized long. It smelled new, like pristine plastic. When the bus stopped and the guide told the tourists to put on their helmets, Pancho sort of missed the familiar sense of old sweat and machine oil that permeated the working suit she'd worn. Even the air blowing gently across her face tasted new, unused. The tour guide and the bus driver both checked out each tourist before they let the visitors climb down from the bus's hatch onto the lunar regolith. Pancho's helmet earphones filled with oohs and look at that, as one by one the tourists stepped onto the ancient ground and kicked up puffs of dust that lingered lazily in the gentle gravity of the moon. "Look how bright my footprints are," someone shouted excitedly. The guide explained, "That's because the topmost layer of the ground has been darkened by billions of years of exposure to hard radiation from the sun and deep space. Your boot prints show the true color of the regolith underneath. Give them a few million years, though, and the prints will turn dark, too. For all the years she'd worked in space, Pancho had never been out on a moonwalk. She found it fascinating once she cut off the radio frequency that carried the tourists' inane chatter and listened only to the pre-recorded talk that guided visitors to the Ranger 9 site. To outward appearances, she was just another tourist from one of the three busloads that were being shepherded along the precisely marked paths on the immense floor of Alphonsus. But Pancho knew that Martin Humphreys was in one of the other buses, and her reason for being here was to report to him, not to sightsee. She let the cluster of tourists move on ahead of her while she lingered near the parked buses. The canned tour guide explanation was telling her about the rills that meandered near the site of the old spacecraft crash. Sinuous cracks in the crater floor that sometimes vented out thin, ghost-like clouds of ammonia and methane. One of the reasons for locating the original moon base in Alphonsus Ringwall Mountains was the hope of utilizing these volatiles for... She saw Humphrey shuffling toward her, kicking up clouds of dust as if it didn't matter. It had to be him, she thought, because his spacesuit was different from the ones issued to the tourists, not different enough to be obvious to the tenderfeet, but Pancho recognized the slightly wider, heavier build of the suit and the tiny servo motors at the joint that helped the wearer move the more massive arms and legs. Extra armor, she thought. He must worry about radiation up here. Humphreys had no name tag plastered to the torso of his suit, and until he was close enough to touch helmet, she could not see into his heavily tinted visor to identify his face. But he walked right up to her, kicking up the dust, until he almost bumped his helmet against hers. She recognized his features through the visor, round and snubby-nosed, like some freckle-faced kid, but with those cold, hard eyes peering at her. Pancho lifted her left wrist and poised her right hand over the comm keyboard, asking Humphreys in pantomime which radio frequency he wanted to use. He held up a gloved hand, and she saw that he was holding a coiled wire in it. Slowly, with the deliberate care of a person who was not accustomed to working in a spacesuit, he fitted one end of the wire into the receptacle built into the side of his helmet. He held out the other end. Pancho took it and plugged it into her own helmet. Okay, she heard Humphrey's voice, almost as clearly as if they were in a comfortable room. Now we can talk without anyone tapping into our conversation. Pancho remembered her childhood, when she and some of the neighborhood kids would create telephone links out of old paper cups and lengths of wax string. They were using the same principle, linking their helmets with the wire so they could converse without using their suit radios. This'll work, Pancho thought, as long as we don't move too far apart. She judged the wire connecting their helmets to be no more than 3 meters long. You worried about eavesdroppers? She asked Humphreys. Not especially, but why take a chance you don't have to? That made sense. A little. Why couldn't we meet down at your place, like usual? Because it's not a good idea for you to be seen going down there so often, that's why, Humphreys replied testily. How long do you think it would be before Dan Randolph finds out you're coming to my residence on a regular basis? Teasingly, Pancho said. So he finds out. He'll just think you're inviting me to dinner. Humphreys grunted. Pancho knew that he had invited Amanda to dinner at his home twice since they'd first met, and he'd stopped asking Pancho to report to him down there. Now they met at prearranged times and places, strolling in the Grand Plaza, watching low-gravity ballet in the theater, doing a tourist moonwalk on the crater floor. Pancho would have shrugged if she hadn't been encased in the suit. She said to Humphreys, Dan made his pitch to the Governing Council. I know, and they turned him down. Well, sort of. What do you mean? He snapped. A couple of citizens volunteered to work on Dan's project. He's going down to the Venezuela space station to try to get Dr. Cardenas to head up the team. Cardenas? She's the top expert at nanotech, Pancho said. They gave her the Nobel Prize, Humphreys muttered, before nanotechnology was banned on Earth. That's the one he's going to talk to. For several long moments, Humphreys simply stood there, unmoving, not speaking a word. Pancho thought he looked like a statue with a spacesuit and all. At length, he said, He wants to use nanomachines to build a rocket. I hadn't expected that. It's cheaper, probably better, too. She sensed Humphrey's